Translation. The Supreme Lord Personality of Godhead is himself this cosmos, and still he is aloof from it. From him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In him it rests, and unto him it enters after annihilation. Your good self knows all about this. I've given only a synopsis. Purport. For a pure devotee, the conception of Mukunda, Lord Sri Krishna, is both personal and impersonal. The impersonal cosmic situation is also Mukunda, because these are the emanation of the energy of Mukunda. For example, a tree is a complete unit, whereas the leaves and the branches of the tree are emanated parts and parcels of the tree. The leaves and branches of the tree are also the tree, but the tree itself is neither the leaves nor the branches. The Vedic version, that the whole cosmic creation is nothing but Brahman, means that since everything is emanating from the Supreme Brahman, nothing is apart from him. Similarly, the parts and parcel, hands and legs, are called the body, but the body as the whole unit is neither the hands nor the legs. The Lord is the transcendental form of eternity, cognition and beauty, and thus the creation of the energy of the Lord appears to be partially eternal, full of knowledge, and beautiful also. The captivated, conditioned souls, under the influence of the external energy, Maya, are therefore entrapped in the network of the material energy. They accept this as all in all, for they have no information of the Lord, who is the primeval cause, nor have they information that the parts and parcels of the body, being detached from the whole body, are no longer the same hand or leg as when attached to the body. Similarly, a godless civilization detached from the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just like a detached hand or leg. Such parts and parcels may appear like hands and legs, but they have no efficiency. The devotee of the Lord, Srila Vyasadeva, knows this very well. He's further advised by Srila Narada to expand the idea so that the entrapped conditioned souls may take lessons from him to understand the Supreme Lord as the primeval cause. According to the Vedic version, the Lord is naturally fully powerful, and thus his supreme energies are always perfect and identical with him. Both the spiritual and material skies and their paraphernalia are emanations of the internal and external energies of the Lord. External energy is comparatively inferior, whereas the internal potency is superior. The superior energy is living force, therefore she's completely identical. But the external energy, being inert, is partially identical. But both the energies are neither equal to nor greater than the Lord, who is the generator of all energies. Such energies are always under his control, exactly as electrical energy, however powerful it may be, is always under the control of the energy engineer. The human being and all other living beings are products of his internal energies. Thus, the living being is also identical with the Lord. But he's never equal or superior to the personality of Godhead. The Lord and living beings are all individual persons. With the help of the material energies, the living beings are also creating something, but none of their creations are equal or superior to the creations of the Lord. The human beings may create a small playful Sputnik and may throw it into outer space, but that doesn't mean that he can create a planet like the Earth or Moon and float it in the air as the Lord does. Man with a poor fund of knowledge claim to be equal to the Lord. They're never equal to the Lord. That is never to be. The human being, after attaining complete perfection, may achieve a large percentage of the qualities of the Lord, say up to 78%, but it is never possible to surpass the Lord or to become equal with him. In a diseased condition, only the foolish being claims to be one with the Lord and thus becomes misled by the illusory energy. The misguided living beings therefore must accept the supremacy of the Lord and agree to render loving service to him. For this they've been created. Without this, there cannot be any peace or tranquility in the world. Srila Vyasadeva is advised by Srila Narada to expand this idea in the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita, also the same idea is further is explained. Surrender fully into the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the only business of the perfect human being. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Ginandana Salakya Shakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The opening words of Srimad Bhagavatam are referring to the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadiyasya ton vayat itartas chate swabhikyasurat tene brahmaridaya adikavaya muyanti yat surya tejo varimedam yatavinimayo yatatrisargamisa damnasvena sadani rastakurkam satyam param dimahi. Which explains how Krishna is the origin of everything, and also explains that Krishna is fully cognizant of everything. He is fully aware of all his energy, unlike the living beings who are not fully aware of all the energy that they are related to. So many things go on in the body we don't know. Invisibly are happening. Krishna, however, is fully cognizant of anything that goes on in the entire material world, in all the various different universes. And yet Krishna is also Swarat. He is also independent. Krishna is, although he is Maya Jakshena Prakite Suyate Sacharacharam, he is controlling the material energies, not doing so by sitting behind a supercomputer and sort of control S in LON and the sun shines in London. It's not that Krishna is involved with the direct management of universal affairs. It is all going on by his desire, by his Satya Sankalpa energy. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says everything is achieved. He simply desires, and then everything manifests. So in this way, Krishna is not in any way distracted by multitasking. That Krishna is performed in his pleasure pastimes and just in some discussion and something happens in the material world and goes like, suddenly this thing happens and then sort of comes back to, what was that again? Where was I? Nothing like that. As we are experiencing when we are managing just a few things, that we get easily distracted and cannot focus on all these things simultaneous. But Krishna is fully cognizant. Krishna is fully cognizant to the point that he knows the thought of every living being. I mean, imagine that. I mean, I have enough with my own thoughts. That's already quite a handful. And what have to deal with the thoughts of all living beings? Okay. Inconceivable. So the greatness of Krishna is truly inconceivable. And in this particular aspect, we are looking as Krishna as the origin of everything, and how Krishna is not only the origin of the creation, but he's also, as being cognizant, he's also fully with it at every point in time. He is the cause of it not once, but he is the cause of everything again and again. Bhagavatam is not only showing Krishna as the original cause and then he was aloof, but Bhagavatam is also showing that Krishna expands himself and then is the cause of many things. Although Krishna personally is not managing the universal affairs, in his expansions he is. In his expansions he is involving himself with the modes of material nature. He is manifesting himself as Purusha avatars, he's manifesting himself as Guna avatars, he's manifesting himself in many, many personal forms, and in each of these personal forms he has some interaction with the material world. So one thing Bhagavatam shows us, how Krishna very thoroughly is connected to every aspect of existence. How in this world he's present everywhere. And how. And in this way, one can thoroughly realize dependence on Krishna. That is the idea. That we can see Krishna everywhere. Just like in Gayatri, Krishna is looked upon as the one who supplies the unlimited energy of the sun. Brahmana Patistaham. Everything rests on Brahman, and the energy of the sun represents that unlimited Brahman energy. It is just endlessly shining and shining and shining. And although there may be theories that, you know, the sun will gradually get extinguished over time, it's not happening really in a perceivable, measurable way. That's just speculation. The sun is going strong, as we experienced in Rath Yatra, for example. So the life of all living beings is fully dependent on the arrangements of the Supreme Lord. So we can, in this way, thoroughly realize our dependence on the Supreme Lord, in an indirect way through his energies. So we are directly dependent on the Lord and indirectly dependent on the Lord, because as living beings, as energy of the Lord, the Shakti is never independent from Shaktiman. We always need external things, constantly. We need air, we need water, we need food, we need so many things. In fact, we need all these things. We need clothes, we need endless things. We need more and more and more, which is all showing our dependence in this material world. Yet, our real dependence is on Krishna himself, on his original personal form. There we can actually find our residence. Here in this world, we can never find any residence. We can roam. We can roam around from here to there, but there is no place which can be really home. It's an illusion when we Bhoma Ijjati, you know, when we think, the land of my birth, I kissed the ground, my ancestors, they appeared in this place, and in this way, they are part of this place, and I'm part of my ancestors, so I am part of this place. We have, like, you know, many generations, like, with this soil, and it is just part of me. No. Bhagavatam explains, like two straws in the river are just floating together for a moment and then are separated by the currents. In this way, living beings come together and are together for a moment on their journey, and maybe for a few lifetimes, maybe, at best, right? Maybe only one, But maybe it even the attachment is so strong. And again, we are again coming together in the next lifetimes. And maybe a few. But what does it mean on eternity? I also experienced something like that once I drove on a railway line which drove right through my hometown, right, just on the outskirts of Amsterdam. And as we're driving through this hometown, sort of, you know, felt like, yes, I was here as a child, right? And a sort of look, you know, do I recognize what I'm, you know, hadn't been there for 20 years. So sort of with some excitement looking at things to recognize that were still there. And then, since it was a train and a small town, it was just flying through the town. And before I knew it, I was out again. And then I was thinking, yes, but I was here also. Anadir Bahimukha, what does it mean? Since time immemorial in this material world, we've been born practically in every place on this planet, right? I mean, every place once was home, right? Not just every country, every place. Anadir Bahimukha means so many births, so many endless appearances here, there, and everywhere. And so, like, therefore, Bome Ijidi, identification with the land of the birth, really doesn't make sense at all. Not at all. Therefore, to say any place is home other than the Holy Dham doesn't make sense. Therefore, I always say, wherever we are in the world, we are tourists, and only in Vrindavan, Mayapur, there is home. There is no other home than that we should realize. Therefore, one should, Maturavas is one of the aspects, five principal limbs of bhakti is Maturavas, to be a resident of Mathura. So one has to internally become a resident of Mathura and just see, this is where I'm at home. And London is hell, as Prabhupada told us. That's all it is. So, Swarka, Apavarga, Narakesu, Apituliartadarsina, we remain equipoised, whether we are in heaven or hell. So, even in London, one can remain equipoised to preach Krishna consciousness, to worship Krishna. But identification with it doesn't make sense. Or with other exotic islands somewhere in the world, or whatever places we may come from. I can pride myself in a low birth in the Netherlands, part of the Netherworlds. You know, it's low in all respect. I can tell you that. If you don't believe it, I can give you a tour. But even that is a false identification. So sarvupadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmanam risikena risikesa sevanam bhaktir uchate. So we leave all these things, all these designations, all our material attributes, place of birth, our degrees, our aristocratic background, intelligence, all these attributes are not ours. Intelligence is something we're given to use. And how intelligent are we? We have a particular type of intelligence, and you know, you can measure it in terms of IQ, that's all right. But still, some people's intelligence works in one way, others' intelligence works in another way. Some works in one area, other works in another area. Different people excel. Some people are great at mathematics, but you know, when it comes to just assessing just common sense, it's lacking, right? So intelligence is such a thing. Somehow or other, it manifests itself. in us as a gift and can just be taken away. I experienced that one day someone offered obeisances to me, and an older man, and he was getting up kind of slowly, you know, like with stiffness in the back, as old men often do. And then the last foot, right, he suddenly went fast. So I was sort of looking down at him, sort of in the blessing Swami pose. And, you know, and suddenly, as he's coming up, he gives me a headbutt. And not just, and you know, I mean, a hard head. He was a hard head, you know. God, that head was hard. Hit me right on the temple, you know, on the side of my head. So I hear myself saying, I'm all right, I'm okay, I'm fine, I'm fine. I wasn't quite sure, but anyway, I was sort of like, yeah, I'm okay. Phew, I was okay. But the next morning, suddenly half of my vision disappeared. Just weird experience. Left side, nothing. Just really half, like there was a line in the middle. And then, then I forgot all names. So I say, what's your name? Call what's his name and tell what's his name that maybe I need a doctor. Right? It's like all names had gone. It was the weirdest thing, you know. And then, anyway, I lied down in a dark room and all these things whatever it was, eventually it got better. But after that, I became dyslexic for like 6 months. And I one day made an announcement, and I was saying, and today is Ekadasi, and we're fasting from grains and beans. And I said, and today we're fasting from brains and greens. the weirdest thing, because I was saying grains and beans, right? And what came out of my mouth was brains and greens. And it's just like, it was a strange experience. And totally out of control. And here we are, you know. I'm on top of it, you know. I'm smart, you know. I'm educated. I know what I'm doing, you know. I mean, leave it to me, you know. Move over. I know what I'm doing here, you know what I mean. I've done it 1,000 times. Yes. And then suddenly it goes wrong. Suddenly it goes wrong. Suddenly the power is gone. Arjuna stood there after the battle of Kurukshetra. Great Arjuna, you know, the great archer, Mahabaho, you know, the one with powerful arms. Oh yes, Arjuna. Arjuna, who had all the weapons of the demigods. Oh, Arjuna, you know, who had personally been up to the celestial planets. Arjuna, who had fought with Lord Shiva and was not defeated. That Arjuna, right? Suddenly, he stood there, powerless, with his bow Gandiva, defeated by some Vaishyas. By some cowherd man, some jats, you know, who attacked the caravan when Arjuna was taking the queens from Dwarka to a safe location after the departure of Krishna. And he was defeated by these cowherd men. Arjuna, how is it possible? How, here's the same bow, the same Gandiva, and now I'm defeated. How can this be? Puna Musika Bhav. Be a mouse again. Have you also been a mouse again? Me, many times in life. That's sort of, I think that's the basic script of life. The basic script of life is Puna Musika Bhav, is be a mouse again. I mean, we all rise to power. Little kid,
I don't want to do it. Let me do it.
No, no, no. You're too small. No, you can't. No, no. You can't cut. No, you'll cut your hand off. No, you can't do it. Finally, you know. Finally, old enough. So many years, never old enough. Finally old enough. Next day, too old. And then it gets worse and worse until you're losing it, you know, until you start dribbling from the mouth and you can't control it, and that's not where it ends, right? The 90-year-old lady said, like, yeah, the thing is, you know, said, like, I never thought of that I would wear nappies again. But that's what it come to, right? Oh, yes. So all these things, Purna Musik above. Basically, Krishna is reducing us. That's the script. It's going to happen to all of us. Oh, my dear old lady, why are you walking so bent over with your nose on the ground? Have you lost something? Fools, can't you see? I have lost the pearl of my youth. And then he said, oh my God, this is scary. This is like, you know. No, it's not. It is not, because what have we got to do with this material energy? It is false identification. We have nothing to do with it. We are simply at the feet of Krishna. And that will never change. Just as I sometimes say, if I would glorify or try to glorify Srila Prabhupada, and I would say, and he was such a great devotee, at the end of his life, he went back to Godhead. I wouldn't consider that glorification of Srila Prabhupada. I would consider that minimizing Prabhupada, because did he ever leave Godhead? Was there ever a moment he was not with Godhead? And that is the point. If we are with Godhead now, then there's no more worry. Will we go back to Godhead? Will I go back to Godhead? Will I not go back to Godhead? Will I go back to Godhead? Will I not go back to Godhead? Will I go back to Godhead? Will I not go? Count your buttons. No. No more counting buttons. Simply we can go. Because we're already there. It's not... So this is the point. To be with Godhead now at the lotus feet of Krishna. And to make that our residence. To just reside there. Always at the feet of Krishna and nowhere else, then the spiritual world is also there automatically. Krishna, when he comes, he doesn't come with hand luggage only, with a little bag, you know, bringing some things from the spiritual world, right? A few transcendental items that I could bring, that I was allowed to bring on the Vaikuntha plane. No, Krishna comes and brings this entire spiritual world with him here when the curtains open and CC Radha Gokula Nanda are there on one side. Then there is Vrindavan. When Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman are on the other side, then there is Ayodhyadham. And there, and Gornitai are in the middle, there is also Swetadweep, the eternal abode of Lord Chaitanya. That's all present here. And the whole temple. It's like that, the spiritual world. We are here. When one steps through the gate of the Bhaktivedanta manor, one steps into another dimension. One steps directly into the spiritual world. Because this is the abode of the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada named the deities in Soho Street, Londoneshwara. Right? So, you know. And in Paris, Ishvara. Does that make all of London into a dam? Maybe it does. Who knows how far it goes. But definitely, by residing at the feet of Krishna, we always reside in the spiritual world. And that is really the simplicity. The simplicity. Then it is not required to constantly analyze how the material energy of Krishna is emanating from Krishna. We have these descriptions in the second canto, and when the sight of the universal form, when the eyes of the universal form manifested, then the power of sight manifested within the universe, and all the different sensual functions are gradually manifesting in the universal form of the Lord. And then the living beings also are able to to perceive through sensual perception. So all these things are relating us to Krishna. But that philosophical exercise is there in the background of the mind in the Vaishnava. In the background, we do have that knowledge. But we do not dwell on that knowledge as our daily sadhana. As a daily sadhana, it is simply Rishikesha, Rishikena, the pleasure of the Lord's senses, the satisfying the senses of the Lord. That is our business. What is pleasing to the senses of the Lord? Offering him nice scents. Ringing a bell to have a kirtan for the Lord. The bell is supposed to be, is representing kirtan, glorification of the Lord, because it draws the attention to the deity. And therefore, it is a kirtan. In this way, one will look, and then offerings are made for the pleasure of the Lord. And in this way, Satsarup Maharaj once said that, in this way, we see the entire world like an altar, and we see ourselves like a pujari. And just like whatever offering we make, we have to purify it a little, cut off the impurities, and then leave the essence which we can offer to the Lord. And in this way, we roam around the material world, looking at the material energy, cutting off the useless elements, and taking what is offerable to Krishna, and simply engaging everything in Krishna. Ravindra Sarup, who is, of course, one of our ISKCON scholars, he was pointing out, he said, there are so many literatures in the world that are not Krishna conscious. And sometimes say, well, are such literatures, can we read them, or is there contamination if we read them, subtle contamination? There certainly is contamination if one just reads mundane literature or takes in information. Nowadays, no one reads literature. Everyone reads only Facebook, and there certainly is also there all kinds of subtle contamination and gross contamination. But his point was this, Ravindra's point was this. He said, such things we should look upon as bhoga. And when we take that bhoga, we should prepare it, cut away the contaminated parts, the parts that we can't use, cut out the part that we can use, and then offer that to Krishna. He said, then these things are become transcendental and can be used in the service of the Lord. I thought it was a nice analogy, a nice explanation of how to relate to these material things. In that way, we see in Bhagavatam, it is said that the material energy is like, we see behind the material energy the smiling face of Krishna. So that is an interesting point. When we are meditating on the smiling face of Krishna behind the material energy, because then, unlike the impersonalist who basically has to say, Maya, 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 Maya everywhere, you know, don't look, do not associate with this, beware, material energy, watch out, you know, never have a straight look at things, you know, cross your eyes somehow or other, avoid to see anything because it could awaken desire. And then you are in trouble. So what to do now? Maya, 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 Maya. Right? Watch out, Maya. But the Vaishnav, because we can see the smiling face of Krishna behind things, we can see the sunshine, we can see the sun, and say, oh, a beautiful day, Maya. You know, how can you enjoy a beautiful day? It's just a temporary material energy. It's a network of death is just going to bind you to the material energy. You're going to die. This is Maya. Spit, renounce it now, you fool. No, behind is the smiling face of Krishna. And therefore, we can see the beautiful sunshine as the smile of Krishna. And, you know, a smile, you know, what is the smile? A smile is a symbol of welcome, right? When someone smiles, it's supposed to mean welcome. Either welcome to you or welcome to your money, right? That's a smile. So, welcome. We can welcome. And through this smile, we can appreciate that Krishna is behind the material energy. And in this way, a Vaishnava can actually appreciate the beauty in the material world without falling prey to it, without saying, oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful world. How can I ever leave it? No. We can say it's a beautiful world, and it shows us a spark of Krishna's splendor. It shows us a little bit of Krishna's beauty. In this way, we don't need to be negative in the material world. Maya, 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 everything is Maya. It's all Maya, 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 Maya. And let's get into this mood. It's Maya.
It's Maya, Maya. Maya, yogi on the elephant, Maya, you know, power, my spiritual power in the fight with Maya.
Of course, there is a fight with Maya, undoubtedly. Because we could just forget that connection with Krishna. Maya means to forget that connection with Krishna. The material energy itself is not Maya, that is Krishna's energy. It is also spiritual, but forgetting the connection with Krishna is Maya. To see things disconnected from Krishna and to see things in purpose disconnected from Krishna. Jewels, jewels, jewels for me. No, jewels, jewels, jewels for Krishna. Give me all your money, 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 give, and I'll give to Krishna. Then, yes, then greed can be overcome, then lust can be overcome, all the material faults can be overcome if we simply offer to Krishna. And in this way, the path of Krishna consciousness is different than the path of the impersonalist who has to become heart, who has to make himself heart in denial. No. Say always no. And the devotee, yes, there is some no, there are some prohibitions, but the focus is on yes. The focus is not on austerity. The focus is on how do I use all these things to celebrate the unlimited glories of Krishna. This is what we do. We celebrate. That is our process. Constant celebration. This is what the arti is about. This is what the worship on the altar is about. Celebration. This is what Harinam Sankirtan is about. We're celebrating. This is what is reading Bhagavatam is about. We're celebrating. We have a celebration here, a Bhagavatam festival, you know, of glorification of Krishna. It's amazing. It's just like the mercy. It's like this festival is amazing. It's not like an ordinary party. When you go to the party and the fun is supposed to be in the party. Here, there's fun in the party, but with every bite, with every step, with everything we do, there's eternal benefit as well. And that dimension of eternal benefit, you know, that makes everything totally amazing. Already, we're having a good time now. It's already fun. But then, you know, prasadam, it tastes good, but with every bite, eternal benefit. In this way, how could one ever go back to become a small-minded man after having been rasa graha in the previous verse that comes up, A devotee is rasagraha. He has tasted the nectar. After that, you can never be an ordinary man again, even if you try. Not possible. I want to taste it again. Oh. I saw in one temple, at one point in Heidelberg, in Germany, they were starting a new rural project in Abenteuer, and they were shrinking down the operation in Heidelberg. So they're closing the temple. And they had a last Sunday feast, and I happened to be invited for that. I didn't know it was the last one. So we're having this big Sunday feast, a big extra long kirtan festival. Then at the end, the temple president comes forward, and he says, yes, a few announcements. And he said, next week there will be no Sunday feasts. You know, well, sometimes there is something, you know, some retreat or a reason for canceling the Sunday feast, right? So everyone is still sleeping. Next week there will be no Sunday feast. And then he says, because there will be no temple. And then everyone goes, like, what? Huh? They all woke up and said, what did he just say? You know? Is that this must be some black humor, you know, some sort of like dark humor or something like this, right? But then it was true. They closed the temple. And then later they opened up a small preaching center somewhere on the outside of the city, but many people never found it. Then after years, they opened up a storefront in the city. And people, right, slowly, slowly, people came staggering into this storefront as if they had crash-landed with a plane in a desert and somehow or other had walked out of the desert, hankering for water. And they came into that store and said, is there some of that food? And there was. And they go like, where were you all this time? Rasagraha. They had tasted it, you know, and just been in the desert of material existence and then hankering for it again and again. This is the glory of this movement. So it's a wonderful movement. And so, actually, all the activities of hearing, chanting, remembering, all the nine aspects of devotional service are very blissful activities, if you think about it. And even if you don't think about it, any questions or comments?